SMH.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome.
Hey, hey. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Pretty good, pretty good.
Good.
All right, we got a lot of follow-up this week, so let's go ahead and get started. First bit of follow-up we have is Nintendo is reported from Bloomberg that Nintendo is going to start using faster NVIDIA chips for its, Bloomberg calls it, new 2021 Switch model. So I know that they've been calling it a Switch Pro, but it might just be like the new Nintendo Switch, like how they did before with the 3DSs and all that.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, hopefully not, but we'll see. But it's reported to have an upgraded NVIDIA chip with DLSS, better CPU, more memory, and then, as reported before, OLED display, 7-inch from Samsung. Let's see, 4K on the TV. It's going to be released with some new games, with improved graphics on those games, and the expected price point from an analyst, so it's kind of, you know, their guesstimate is it's going to have a $100 premium to the existing version, so it could be like $349, $399. I'm not too concerned about the price, but what really excites me is that it's going to have that DLSS in it.
Explain a little bit more on that.
So I can't I'll have to look up the acronym. I'll put it in the show notes. But what DLSS is, it's kind of hard to say, is NVIDIA's tech, and AMD is actually working on their own version of this. But in all the 30 series GeForce chips, and I think actually in some of the 20 series, I could be wrong. It's in those chipsets, and what it does is it allows you to get higher quality or higher resolution graphics, but use less system resources. So that's how on the new 30 series GeForce GPUs, they're able to claim that you can like render a game at 8K. And so what it does is it uses like a AI to dynamically render certain parts of the screen with more fidelity versus others based off of, I guess, you know, what details in the scene and basically what is going to make the most visual difference to you as you're playing the game.
So I hope with this, because it's great to hear them put new and improved hardware in there, especially something that can support new tools, essentially. The thing is like, if you remember the new 3DS XL, it was supposedly a little bit more powerful. It did load games faster and such. And at one point they talked like, hey, there's going to be games that are engineered specifically for this new model and it won't run right on the older ones, et cetera, because it's going to utilize the new specs. I wonder, or I hope, I would say, is once they pull this out and it, you know, nice new piece of hardware, better specs, that developers actually do utilize the differences or offer kind of like what Xbox and PlayStation's doing. We're like, hey, if you have this game, we've made a better version of the game, upgrade for free, et cetera, et cetera. I hope that's what they do, because it would be nice to see, even if you're looking back, Doom 2016, right? So Panic Button, I believe it was, ported it over to the Switch. And, you know, it was surprising that it actually ran, for one. But the resolution and such could use an upgrade, especially if they give this new hardware in there. And I would be very happy with that, because I do love that game and it would be cool to see that at a better running and resolution rate on a handheld.
Yeah, I'm actually, the way that I understand it, I think with the DLSS 2.0, I'm assuming it's going to be 2.0 because that's NVIDIA's latest tech, that the game itself, like if it was an undocked mode, could render at its normal resolution of 720 or hopefully 1080, but it sounds like it might just be 720. And then when it's docked is when maybe it'll kick in that DLSS rendering. And so it'll take the lower resolution game engine rendering, and basically it upscales it to 4K. So as long as the game supports DLSS, I think you won't have, hopefully, if it works the way that I think, you wouldn't have a bifurcation of like, this game only works on the new Nintendo, you know, the new Switch, where you could still run on the older system, but using the DLSS machine learning, it would be upscaled, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I continue to stay excited about it. I didn't really think about it much before you said this, but I do hope they don't call it the new Nintendo Switch. I hope they do give it some sort of name that makes sense.
There used to be the iPad, and then it was the new iPad. So now it's probably going to be like, what, the Switch Max, Switch Max Pro, Switch Max Switch Plus. Switch
Pro. It says, I think it's like the Plus or the Pro. Yeah.
Switch XL.
Everyone's doing Plus, though, so maybe not. Maybe they'll go against the grain.
Oh, yeah. The Switch Plus.
Super Switch.
There it is. Done. Let's go trademark that before. Actually, that's how you find out.
Yeah.
Look through the trademark filings.
Go to Hover. I'm going to go to Hover real quick. Yeah. Superswitch.com. Super Switch Online's taken. Oh, no. Super Switch is for sale. I have to buy it with another domain? I don't know. It's very confusing.
Our detective skills have rendered nothing.
Super Nintendo Switch is taken. But anyway, yeah. So a little bit more info on trickling out for the Nintendo Switch Plus Max. So I look forward to that because mine, I think, is getting close to being on its last legs. Every time I play it, I can hear the fan start to make like a weird rattling sound because it got dropped a long time ago.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing is, though, is that we're at the point where we know it's happening, right? It was just like speculation they were going to do it. We at least know that, hey, it's coming.
Yeah, there's too much smoke now for there not to be a fire.
We actually have another follow-up from something we spoke about several weeks ago about Razer. And one of the follow-ups we wanted to bring in was the Razer mask itself was something that it was called Project Hazel, that it was kind of an in and out, it seemed like, once before. Like maybe it was just a concept. But recently they have spoken up and confirmed they are going to move forward with the Razer mask. The Project Hazel is a go. So not sure about pricing.
April Fools.
Right. Speaking of April Fools, they did post something today. They made the Chroma hair dye.
Oh, that's funny.
Are you sure that's a joke? Because you've also linked to a straw that they're making now. I know I'm jumping the gun here, but come on.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is real.
I like how they call it the Rapunzel. That's funny.
That's right. It was Rapunzel. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. That's good.
Yeah. One of the, I assume, is the April Fools. If it wasn't, then I would definitely be shaking my head, but SMH. But no, they are coming out with the straw as well. And this one is like a little compact. You push it together, pop it in a case, and it comes with its own little cute brush. And I believe their slogan is like, go green with Razer. But they're clearly getting into a different market space. I don't know if that's like their long-term initiative or just like, hey, we're dabbing in this here and there, or if that's really what they want to do.
Maybe they're like hedging their bets with the chip shortage. They're like, oh, we can't make keyboards and mice right now, so straws.
Yeah, they're going to be like the next lifestyle brand. You'll see them at like Razer and Target, like make like towels, dish towels and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oxo Good Grips.
Yeah, exactly. Like random stuff.
I love OXO. That's a good brand.
Yeah, they're going to get me when they come out with that little fold-up cup, you know, little traveler's cup.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah. I used to think those were so cool when I was like 8.
Why do I think if I'm like, wasn't there a movie with Ace Ventura, not Ace Ventura, but Jim Carrey, somebody popped one of those out. I'm trying to think.
There's a movie and a meme with Jason Momoa where he like pops out a folding chair at like a soccer game and then sits on it like a badass.
No, this is something old. I remember seeing one of those cups and something I thought was a comedy when I was a kid. But anyway, I digress. It would be interesting to see where they continue to go with this stuff and how far they really push outside of a mask and a straw.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I can't really blame them for trying. It's just kind of strange because it seems really outside of their lane as far as their brand so far.
But maybe with their brand, it attracts enough people to jump on the wagon of some of these things, and we really do actually help make some of a difference, right?
Yeah, maybe that's it. It's like they're targeting their market with these things and making it for their market. You know, it's like...
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, it's like they have the gamer market for XYZ. Now, what else can we get them involved in and caring about the environment? Well, stick with us, you know, and stick with our products. You trusted us already kind of thing, maybe. I don't know.
Well, when they make it look cool, too, because I'm one of those that was like, I'm not going to buy a reusable straw like that I'm going to just clean out and keep doing. But then I seen that one. I was like, that's kind of cool looking, you know? I mean, it's
so you're their market. Like, that's exactly it. Like, they got you. They
exactly.
Got you.
I mean, like, I like a little bit of style to some of my stuff. And that was something, like, for instance, I've got chopsticks that are face huggers. I wouldn't normally buy chopsticks, but then I seen their face huggers.
That's dope. You've got to show me those.
Yeah, those are
put a link in the show notes cool. Let's see if we can get a link to those, because that's awesome.
But that's my point, though. I wouldn't have bought chopsticks.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I get it.
I just had a thought about their straw. So it's like a telescoping straw. I'll put a picture in the artwork for this chapter, but... You know, it comes with that brush, but if you telescope it down, like if there's any leftover like mouth crust or anything in there, it'll just like keep pushing it all back because it'll like telescope down into the next ring and then that ring into the next. And so, you know, it just kind of cleans itself.
That's disgusting. I just pictured lots of crust, layers of crust. That's, yeah.
But, you know, like... If it's completely folded out, though, and you scrub it and the lips are outward and you're still washing it, right? I don't know.
Yeah. So speaking of companies making changes, we have some more Intel follow-up. This last week, Gelsinger, I think is his name, the new CEO of Intel, it's only been on the job for like 38 days, had a big keynote, I guess. I don't follow Intel's like media and like marketing too much, so I don't know if this is a scheduled one or if it was just kind of off the cuff, but it was a doozy. He came out and laid out all the different changes that Intel is going to be making, basically addressing a lot, if not all, of the issues that we've talked about and what, you know, other industry analysts and podcasters and things like that have talked about. So catch you up. First off is we talked about their struggle to like shrink their process and get 7 nanometers out. So Gelsinger explained what they're going to do and why they were running behind. So now their 7 nanometer process is due in 2023. So still, you know, a good ways out. They're still late, but they're back on the right track because apparently the issue that they had was there was a lithography technology called EUL. Yeah, EUL, EUV? No, EUV. And that stood for Extreme Ultraviolet Lithography. And at the time that Intel started working on their 10 nanometer process, that technique or technology was really not mature. And so they didn't want to bet on it. So what Intel ended up doing is develop their own lithography technique for 10 nanometer. And then once they got it done on 10 nanometer, they thought they could get it working for 7. Well, they couldn't. And during all of this time, the EUV lithography got very mature. And so now what Intel's doing is basically throwing away their lithography work that they had done before and adopting extreme ultraviolet lithography and partnering with a company called ASML, who is apparently the company that perfected and did all the work for EUV. So they're back on the right track for as far as their process shrinks go. So that was pretty exciting. He also touched on where they're going to be headed in the future. And his big pitch was system in a package versus silicon on a chip, or system on a chip, sorry. And basically, it's kind of an in-between for where, you know, a system on a chip is like, you know, the iPhone, all the Apple's processors, they're all systems on a chip. So everything is on the chip. And the opposite end of that spectrum is, you know, your standard Wintel PC that you build. You know, you've got all your components, you put them all in there. In between that is the system in package. And so I didn't fully follow it, but basically instead of having everything on the chip, you would have different systems that you could incorporate into the package to build, not you as like a user, but like Intel or, Intel. So they could have like different types of technology and like swap them and add them onto the package instead of maybe putting that out into, you know, a motherboard or things like that. So you're probably going to see a shrink in systems, but then also still have the versatility and diversity that you can get in the PC market now. He just touched on that slightly, but the big change is what they call IDM 2.0. And what this initiative is Intel is going to still do a majority of their like chip fabrication internally. They're also going to have some of it be done by third parties, which they had done before. You know, they've done that for like cellular chip, cellular modems and other components, but never for, you know, integrated GPUs or GPUs, I think. But they've never done it for CPUs. And so the big shift is that they're going to allow third parties to fab their CPUs. And the idea behind this is that they can meet the cost, like the price guidelines that they want to hit for price metrics for a chip, or maybe the quantities and things like that. So the third parties are going to help them be able to hit those goals. And then the other big thing is that Intel is actually going to start fabbing third-party chips. So in this announcement, Gelsinger said that they've started a new standalone business unit. It's still within Intel, but it has its own profits and loss. So it basically is operating as its own business. It's a separate business unit, and it's called Intel Foundry Services. And what is really cool about this is that customers, so like, you know, other computer manufacturers or, you know, Amazon or anybody that wants to use x86 properties can go to Intel and say, hey, I want an x86 chip, but I don't really need any graphics for it. I need, you know, maybe this AI IP, and Intel has all kinds of different, you know, IPs that basically they're going to allow you to mix and match what you need to make your own custom chip, and then Intel will fabricate it for you. And this is what TSMC does. And that's why they've gotten so big, is people can come to them and say, hey, I need you to make this chip for me. What should we do? And TSMC basically has like amazing customer service to help that customer make what they want. And Intel saying, hey, we're going to get in on this business. And what it allows Intel to do is to scale up large and be able to put the investment in to build new processes. Because every time there's a new process, you basically have to build a brand new fabrication plant. And what this will allow Intel to do is be able to do that better and not be breaking the bank. So yeah, pretty interesting. A lot of stuff there. But I was joking offline that this is like Intel's think different moment. It's like Gelsinger is the Steve Jobs coming back to Intel and taking it back to his roots. And in there was a question and answer segment in there. And after this, I promise I'll stop. But there was a question and answer segment, and somebody asked Gelsinger, like, you know, you all tried to do this before. Like, Intel had tried to fab third-party chips before, but they kind of, like, had a weak offering. They didn't have their own third-party unit. They didn't have a separate business unit that reported directly to the CEO. And so there was like a conflict, you know, because Intel does their own chip designs and fabrication, and that conflicts with doing third-party ones. And Gelsinger hammered home, like, he wants to bring the company back to its roots of when it was founded and when we had Moore's Law. Like, every year there was, you know, the CPU speed got faster, chip shrunk every year. And his mantra behind that is execute, execute, execute. So they are going to, anything that they say they're going to do, they're going to execute it 100%, if not more. And I think they're going to, if anything, under promise and over deliver, where in the previous CEO, they kind of didn't exactly tell the truth and kept trying to like hope, you know, that they would get out of the hole that they were in and not do the work.
That's interesting. I mean, I want to see them come back and do some cool stuff. So it's neat that they're doing this direction, a build your own style proc.
Yeah, I could see, first of all, I loved his transparency on everything, to your point, exactly, Ryan. That, like, you could tell it's a different mentality from leadership. And yeah, so I'll be interested to see the fabrication from the standpoint of, like, Amazon, for instance, started making some of their own stuff. And I think they used TSMC as well to do the fabrication. Like, they designed some of their own chips for a lot of their cloud infrastructure. I think Google's done the same, especially with when it comes to like some of the machine learning chips and stuff. It'll be cool to have Intel, right? Like, in that space and providing some of their knowledge and expertise to some of those companies. Cause I think, think about a Google even, or Amazon, even at their scale, like spinning up a division who is designing chips, like, when that's a lot of money and effort when they could just like partner with Intel or someone who's like offering that, you know?
Yeah. And you bringing that up reminded me that they're not just going to fab, offer foundry services. That's different from the fabrication itself. It's more of a higher level thing, but they're not going to just do x86 chips. Somebody can come with like a RISC architecture and they're going to handle that as well. And that's what Amazon has done. Graviton, that's the name of it. With their Graviton system is an ARM system, I believe. And Twitter is porting all over all of their like timeline processing to run on Graviton. And where this is a strong suit for Intel is they already, x86 already has such a foothold in the server side and server systems. Amazon and Google are make up a majority of the share of their business right now. And so instead, in everybody's starting to specialize, like you said, right? Build their own custom chips to do this one specific thing that they need to do. And since they're already on x86, they can now come to Intel and say, hey, we're on x86, that's fine, but you know, let's add this little machine learning magic in here, or can we add some more GPU compute stuff in here and make their own specific, you know, special little chip? But then the software doesn't have to be rewritten because it still runs x86.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that'll be a huge money saver, right? And like not having to retrain or redo like all of your architecture from a software perspective, just huge, huge
savings. Yeah, I mean, that can save you a year's worth of time easily. Yeah.
And you're talking a whole development team, if not more, right, to then rewrite everything, or you know, a whole new system that you're creating. So yeah, absolutely. I think this is win-win for a lot of people. Yeah, I totally get it. In the article too that we're going to link to, so they're investing, was it $25 billion is like this initial investment
already?
In a new plant in Arizona, which I think is awesome. I think it just helps our economy in the U.S. So it's already like, let's start off on the right foot of, you know, creating new jobs in the U.S. And in the new direction that Intel is going. And I think, yeah, sure, they're late to the 7-nanometer. But with all the other stuff, like I think they're going to do great. I think this will be a really good chapter for them.
It's a good start. That's for sure. So, you know, keep following through, and we'll keep tabs on them.
As someone who's not following through on some of the things that we hoped, we've talked about AT&T a little bit in the past, but there's a new drive with new administration's infrastructure plans. One of the big things it includes is broadband internet to rural areas, pretty much the whole U.S., right? Like there's a lot of the administration wants like a bare minimum of broadband accessibility, which I think this past year has shown us that's probably a good idea with the way that work has gone remote and school and all that kind of stuff has definitely changed. But oddly enough, our lovely AT&T is lobbying against nationwide fiber. A lot of it, and you know, there's a lot in this article, but the biggest piece of it is essentially they're just like, it's going to cost us too much money. It's too costly to run the fiber optic cables. We believe in our process of, you know, running it to the neighborhood and then running copper to the house. And if we have to run fiber to everyone's house, then the bills are going to go up, kind of thing. So it's almost like they just don't want to deal with it, which I kind of understand because they've been pushing 5G so hard, and a lot of the companies have. And it sounds like they would rather focus and spend their money on that than, you know, traditional fiber to the house and that kind of thing.
Yeah, what really got me salty, and I think whoever was writing the article was a little salty about it too, is AT&T said that that doing that, deploying fiber everywhere, would be called overbuilding. And it says AT&T said that overbuilding areas that already have acceptable speeds would, quote, devalue private investment and waste broadband directed dollars. And then I pulled a quote from the article that says overbuilding, quote, is what the broadband industry calls one ISP building in an area already served by another ISP. And that's what everybody else calls competition.
Yeah, in a free market society.
Right. Right. Like, yeah. Basically,
companies, man.
Yeah, basically AT&T was saying, like, what I got out of their statement, I didn't read their original blog post, I only read this article, but what I got out of the statement was AT&T was saying, people in the country don't need internet. They don't need fast internet. That would just be a waste. People in the city, though, they need fast internet because they're like smart tech people. Like, it was really insulting to a large swath of their customer base.
The majority of Americans, I feel like, right? Like, the majority of people still live in those areas that they're talking about. Yeah, they said that a 10 meg connection is fine for most areas. And if you've ever been on one of those connections in today's world, because again, people who design websites, like, they take those things into consideration, but not all the time, right? Like,
not anymore.
Exactly.
Modern web practices is tons of JavaScript, large assets that you have to download. So, you know, an average website's anywhere from like 3 to 5 megs now to download, when it used to be like kilobytes.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's why we spend so much time and energy on caching strategies and CDNs and the like, is because we need those assets that are that large, but we need them to be fast, right? Like, we need them to load fast.
Right, yeah.
But still, like, even with a 10 meg connection, you get 2 or 3 people doing simultaneous, one streaming, some Netflix or something. It was pretty demeaning, I feel like, when they started saying stuff like that.
Especially after this last year, you know, with everybody working from home and the pandemic keeping everybody isolated and everybody using Zoom, AT&T said that the speeds that they offer were good enough for Zoom, but then admitted that, like, oh, if you're using Zoom, but then somebody's streaming in the other room and somebody else is on Twitter, it might get a little tight. And I'm like, yeah, that's a typical house. I would love to know what kind of internet connection, like, the CEOs and the executives at AT&T have. Do they have, like, fiber to their house? Do they make, like, a special run just to their house? Or are they just struggling on a pixelated Zoom like everybody else?
Well, I think it's interesting too, and one of the things that's always frustrated me with these connection types is because I've lived in areas that's only had 5 to 10 meg, and that's all you can get. And the thing that is really crazy, I understand it's normally an independent business versus like AT&T or someone like that, but you're talking, they're spending, you know, $90 for the 10 meg connection, 5 meg connection versus, you know, $90 would get you 400 to a gig with a lot of these other businesses. So that's the part that's really sad to me, though, is that they have no other option. This is what they have to do. And they're paying the same price as someone else who would get way more benefit out of it.
Right, because like you said, there's no competition. AT&T owns those phone lines. And a lot of times they actually own the poles. And so there's no way for anybody else. I mean, heck, there's not really any other traditional telecom carriers anymore. They've all got reconsolidated into AT&T. But there's no like free market competition because they own the lines. They own those lines because the government let them do it. It's not like AT&T, you know, built everything on their own dime. They got money.
Exactly.
Sorry. The last thing I'll say that made me mad is, like, towards the end of the article, AT&T basically said, like, you know, if we're warning you, if you make this a requirement that we have to start running like fast internet to everybody, it's going to make your bills higher. It's like, yeah, don't threaten me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's ridiculous. One nice thing, though, the FCC, we'll link this. I want everyone to do this. In the show notes, we'll link to this. But they want to hear from all of the American citizens how your internet access actually is versus what the companies say, because they're not trusting the ISPs. And I will say that I found that they straight up lied about my address. So I put in my address, and you could view on the one link what is said to be available to you at this address. And it says that I should be able to get 1,000 up, 1,000 down fiber and from AT&T. And every time I call AT&T, they said, no, sorry, it's not available. So
guess what? Same here. Same yep. exact thing.
There you go. So this is why they're not trusting them. And this is why. So there's two links, the one to check your address for what it shows, and then another link to send the FCC a complaint. And so they want to hear from everyone. So the more people that do this, the better, because they can then start leaning on the companies to say, look, this is a consumer issue, right? Like, you're telling us that this is what you're providing to consumers, and it's a lie. So hopefully we can get things better.
And that form it's a free, like a free form or free field form. I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's not very descriptive. You can put whatever yeah, you want in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, don't let it throw you off when you put in your internet yep. speed. Yeah, so speaking of, I guess, slow things, the internet was all a flutter this last week when the Ever Given cargo ship got stuck sideways in the Suez Canal. So there was all kinds of GIFs and memes and people tracking the boat. If you didn't see it, we'll put a link in the show notes to I guess one of the many articles that talked about it. But what I've got in here, I thought was pretty funny. So Microsoft's new flight simulator is very, I haven't played it yet. I keep wanting to play it, but the pictures of it, it looks beautiful. And some wonderful person made a mod for it. And what it does is it adds the Ever Given to the Suez Canal, like stuck sideways. And you can, it also has like all the boats and everything stuck behind it and stuff. So you can fly in, you know, in a flight simulator and see the massive empire sized Ever Given sideways in the Suez Canal. So I thought it was funny.
I was going to say, this is what makes it so monumental. Is the community just has to take everything to that next step of let's just put this in the game.
I love it because it's like, you know, this is hilarious. It disrupted like 10% of global like shipping. This was like a big economic issue, and everyone's like, this is hilarious. Let's put it in a game. You know, that I just love that.
Yeah, I think the German word for that is Schadenfreude.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, this is so amazing. Like, we're just all like, ha ha ha, and it's costing these companies billions of dollars.
Hate to be you, buddy.
Yeah. Can you imagine being that captain? Whew.
Yeah.
Man. Especially when they pulled up the GPS data.
Yeah, maybe he deserves it. Or she.
Yeah. Whoever was piloting this
they.
Thing. They definitely, I don't know, to me, and this, there's a link to this, there's a semi R-rated phallic symbol drawn in the GPS data. I mean, maybe, I don't know. Some people say maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one because you sent this to me and I was like, I don't know.
I think there's more to this than, what we've heard, but maybe not this. Maybe it wasn't deliberate.
I don't know. I would really, I hope like that the captain gets like interviewed. Maybe this is like his last day on the job and he was like, forget it. I'm sending a message. But the wind blew him sideways is what they said in the canal.
I'm assuming this is more of a this ain't good.
Yeah. Maybe like it was totally disconnected. Like he did the thing, like GPS data, like, ah, this will be funny. And then just happened to get stuck. It was like, ah, crap.
Karma will get you.
Yeah. It's like, well, or he like jumped off that boat real quick and like, we'll never be here.
Just let it coast.
Yeah.
Maybe he dropped the dollar and, you know, he just like leaned over to get it, but he accidentally like pulled the wheel with him.
Yeah. Oh, you know what it was? It was probably that new self-driving beta. He probably installed that from Tesla on his boat. And that's what happened. It just jerked to the left and right into the edge of the canal.
Thought it saw a water buffalo or something and said, ah. Run aground.
Yep. So did you all see the new Boston Dynamics robot? It seems like they come out with a new robot like every 3 months. And typically they kind of like scares me because it's Terminator-esque or just too anthropomorphic. So they came out with this new one. It's called Stretch. And it doesn't seem that threatening unless you work at like an Amazon warehouse. In that case, it's going to take your job. Because what this robot does is it's a package tosser. So it has a square base that it can, it's mobile. So its battery, I think, operates for 8 hours. Yeah, it works on a battery for 8 hours, tethered. And it has like a big arm. If you've ever seen a any kind of pictures or video of like a automotive factory with the robotic arms that would do like spot welds on the car frames and things like that, it kind of looks like that, but on a mobile base. And what it's made for is picking up boxes. It can pick up to 50-pound boxes, which doesn't seem that heavy, but it's, you know, it's pretty heavy. And according to Boston Dynamics, it can do 800 boxes an hour, which is equivalent to a human. So they say, the one saving grace for you, if you work in an Amazon warehouse, is that, it doesn't operate by itself. It has to be operated by a human. So you can be trained, I guess, to, operate this machine. But it looks really cool. It's got like little suction cups that it uses to pick up the box. And then it'll turn around and put it on, you know, the conveyor belt or wherever. What really made me think like, ooh, this one's going to maybe take some people's jobs depending on price. They haven't announced a price. Is in the video they show it just roll up into the back of a truck and it's pulling the like roller conveyor behind it and it just pulls that up next to it in the truck, and then it turns and starts unloading the package. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really going to probably, you know, take some spots.
But it's man-operated, right? So you're saying, like, it has to be remoted by someone?
That's what I read, yeah, is that it is human-operated. It does have a camera, like, tower and sensor, like, system. So I'm assuming maybe you can operate it remotely, like from far away. I'm not sure. That's not clear. But in the video, Boston Dynamics kind of shows you what the robot sees. And so it can see like, oh, I'm in a truck and there's a, you know, a thing behind me. And then here's all these stacks of boxes and it'll go and grab a box and put it behind it and what have you. So I think all of their machines are, you know, human controlled.
Interesting.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure at some point it'll be, oh, you can upgrade it to fully automated mode or whatever with like human override, those kinds of things, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that would it'd be a lot more dangerous.
Oh, sure.
I'm not sure. I know that Amazon does have some like...
Yeah, they have the warehouse little... dudes
little
are like
scuttlebots take all the
pallet
product product and like move it around to like make it efficient for loading and stuff and sorting. So maybe they've already solved that problem, but I feel like this beast like flying around in a warehouse would be kind of sketchy to me.
I don't know. To me, like, yes, it definitely like gets us towards that direction, right? Of cheaper robots for this type of task that I could see maybe someday at like a Walmart or, you know, your Sam's Club, or whatever kind of, you know, store that's going to have the need to use a non-human to, you know, unload and load trucks.
Yeah. I mean, let me tell you, I worked at Home Depot for a couple years just doing freight part time in the afternoon. And I would have loved to had like a little arm robot that I could use to just like drive into the paint aisle and put the pallets of paint up. Because after doing like a pallet of paint for about an hour, your wrists kill you because those paint cans are heavy.
I want to see two of them like arm wrestle.
the real stuff, right?
That will not end well. Robotic over the top.
Stallone comes out of nowhere, just starts beating the shit out of both of them.
But yeah, I mean, thinking about just, you know, machinery in general, and like I said, I used to do freight at Home Depot. You know, we had all kinds of machines that we used. We had like electric pallet jacks, we had forklifts, we had what they call a reach truck. There was a small forklift basically that you could get into the island or into an aisle.
The Big Joe, did you have one of those?
We had that. Is that the one that like basically is a platform and just raises you straight up?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had one of those too. Yeah, that thing's a little sketchy. You got to make sure you're latched in on that one. So I could see like maybe having, you know, possibly having one of these at like a big like warehouse type retail store. But definitely in a place like Amazon, like an Amazon warehouse, I could see this being beneficial. It just really, or heck, even UPS. But I think what's really going to determine where this ends up is the cost. Because if it's very like super expensive, you're only going to see it at like Amazon warehouses, UPS, things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's, you know, a couple, I mean, like $5,000, $10,000 or less, maybe you'll see it at retail stores, like warehouse retail stores, maybe. Because that's around the price of like a forklift.
Like at Wendy's, those really big burgers.
Yeah, well, you know, Dairy Queen, when they put the Blizzard out the window and turn it upside down, they could just be a robot.
Hey, there we go.
Doesn't do it once. I get a free Blizzard, though. So, yeah, Boston Dynamics make really cool robots that typically freak me out, but I still think they're pretty cool. So this is their latest one. Who wants to take us into the Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
So you guys watch the Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Are you the new Cap?
Herp-a-derp.
Aww. Yeah, so we had previously said, you know, we were going to go episode by episode on Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So we're going to do the first two episodes tonight, and then going forward, we should have a new episode every night or every week. So, yeah, episode one, episode two. What'd you guys think? I didn't really have a whole lot to say in episode one, but I liked it. It's a good show.
I liked where they went with the first episode. It wasn't the best, but at the same time, I understand why they were doing it. It was setting up a lot of where they are right now, where they're going to meet up, kind of feel. I liked it. I like what they're, you know, Sam Wilson and Bucky both had their issues, and it makes sense the type of issues that they would be running into.
Yeah. I had that in my notes as well. Like, I really liked how it kind of showed the struggle of a soldier trying to reenter like society.
Yes, that was very good. I thought. Now, I was gonna say, I think that you know, often that side of even in Marvel Universe they don't show a ton of, right? So I thought that was really cool to see. Like, hey, look, these guys have been off. They've been doing this thing, and now they're back. And like, especially Bucky, like facing demons, right? Like the. All of that,
oh my
like,
gosh,
depressive yeah. stuff that he's having to face. Like that's some deep stuff he's got to deal with.
So the old Asian man that he met, I thought it was just like a friend of his that like he knew from a long time ago, and like that he served with or something. But
yeah,
then,
they did that whole thing to you.
Yeah, and then it turned out that he killed that guy's son, and that guy was like destroyed because he doesn't know what happened to his son, and so Bucky has to like deal with that grief. That messed me up. I was like, oh, I can't believe I didn't like catch it, because I'm normally pretty good about like seeing where a show is going to go and like guessing the ending. But that one, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And that's the thing is just like, it's, he had a line in there where the psychiatrist was like, hey, I mean, you're free. You're mentally free and you're pardoned. So you're free. And he's like, free to do what? It's heavy stuff. And I think that's one of the things that I do like, where they sometimes touch base, like Sony did it with Spider-Man Homecoming with, what's his name? The villain.
Mysterio?
No. The first one. The one with the Vulture, and it was Michael Keaton. He was relatable. You know, he was just a guy doing his job, and everything got taken away from him. He was trying to make ends meet and turn into a criminal from it. And there was a relatability just on the normal struggles, instead of just being like, hey, I'm a man who wants power, da 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 da. But I think it's interesting to see this stuff, and I really like their dynamic between Sam and Bucky.
Yeah, I like the... Because like they have a common thread, but also two very different issues, like separate from each other.
Different but personalities, all, too.
Yeah, exactly, and how they're each, like... you know, reacting to the things that they're dealing with as they're back, right? Like with Sam, it's like all that like family stuff, right? Like it's still really heavy stuff to have to deal with. And then there's like a lot of race issues that they're starting to bring out.
Yeah, that was in episode 2.
Yeah. Well, I could see it in a little bit in 1. When stuff starts to play out.
Really? Like what?
I have some I can see some of the where maybe some of the writing is trying to show that, like, and this is just me reading into some of this, where America would rather have a white boy, pretty boy as Captain America. And so that's why, like, having him say like, oh, I don't want to be Cap, like, and then they were, you know, basically just hid the fact that they were really wanting someone else because they didn't want a black person to be Captain America. And again, this is me reading into it. But yeah, that's a lot of some of the dynamic that's, there. Could,
that's
could
a possible. That's a possibility. Yeah, I didn't read it as that because he never acted like he did want it.
No. So, yeah, no, that's, yeah, totally. I think that they used him not wanting it.
Yeah.
As a lot of, it seems like they're using that as like the cover to say, like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. Like, and then all of a sudden, derpy blonde pretty boy comes out of nowhere. Right?
Yeah, that's an interesting take. Yeah.
Well, no, you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, I think we all agreed, and I had this explicitly in my notes, and I'm so sorry, for, you know, nothing personal to the actor, but it's just with the helmet on, like, the new Cap is derpy.
Yeah. Yeah. It did look really goofy, and somehow or another, I feel like they were intentionally doing that. Like, I think, obviously, they want you to not like this character. They want you to feel cringy.
Yeah.
Just like how Bucky and Sam feel about him.
Yeah. So anything left on episode 1, we're going to move on to episode 2?
No.
Yeah. Okay. I liked episode 2. I mean, so I liked the part with the Asian son and father in episode 1. But I think I liked episode 2 more than episode 1. You know, Ryan, you were talking about racial injustice. You know, we're speaking in a from a position of not fully understanding the gravity of that, but you know, we try to. But I really caught on to this in episode two, where they're going to talk to one of Bucky's basically old enemies. And they're walking down the street, and there's two boys, African-American boys, and they walk past him, and he goes, "Oh, man, you're the Black Falcon." And he says, "Oh, I'm not the Black Falcon. I'm just the Falcon." And because originally the character used to be called the Black Falcon, and then over the years they've you know, made it less racial. He's just the Falcon. And so they kind of addressed that. But then also the funny part in the punchline was like, "Well, what are you, a black kid? Are you the black kid?" Or something like that. He's like, "What are you? I'm a kid." He goes, "Oh, you're not the black kid?" And so I thought that was a really funny part, just to point out, like, you know, that your skin color doesn't define who you are. And, you know, he's the Falcon, and he's not the Black Falcon. He's the Falcon. So I really liked that part. And then, yeah, I mean, that whole episode for me was like about race. The other part in this is all in that same little segment there. But, when they come back out, so while they go in and they talk to the black super soldier who never, you know, nobody had ever heard of before because he was put in jail because of his skin color. And then when they go outside, Bucky and Falcon are arguing with each other. And then the police pull up, and because they see an African-American person, you know, yelling in the street, they think there's a problem. So they get out and they're, you know, going to start arresting him and doing all this harassing him, asking for his ID. And they didn't even say anything to Bucky about it. Right. They're like, "Oh, you just stand over there. We're after this guy right here." And he's like, do you know who he is?" And then the officer's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. Can I get your autograph?" It's like, get out of here, dude. Like, I thought it was a great episode that kind of, you know, is highlighting there's still a lot of racial inequality that people deal with every day.
I like that they really focused on just their overall struggles with the real reality of what they personally each are dealing with, especially because I really... You got to sympathize with Bucky. He wasn't in control at all. He was brainwashed, and yet he's got to deal with what other people forced him to do. And it was what I really enjoyed out of it was what they pulled off at the end, where they were staring at each other and he finally came out and they both, you know, had their both differences and they both made sense. You know, Sam did what he needed to do because he felt it was right. And Bucky at the same time is like, "Steve picked you, man. And if it's wrong for you, then he's wrong about me." And that's a big deal, just a huge underline for both of them. And I think it sets the tone of where it's going to go. I mean, you know, they're going to end up being buds. Like that's just inevitable, but it's interesting to see them so different yet still on the same wave at a certain level.
Yeah. I agree. Like their relationship, I thought was so cool. Like they basically had couples counseling. At the end, I thought that was great. I thought that was so, like, it's perfect because it's kind of what it is. Like, if you have one of those friends who is essentially, you know, almost like a brother, really, like, yeah, you have your moments where you're like, "I want to kill you," and you question everything they do. But at the end of the day, you're like, "Okay, yeah, I get it." Like, and you're bros, right? I think that's kind of the relationship that they're setting up, and I thought that was really good. And I also think too, on the episode as a whole, it really, like, that's where I was saying, like, it was kind of confirming a lot of some of what the racial tensions that they're kind of building, as well as like the idea of control, like you're saying, Adam. Like, so with meeting the Black Super Soldier, you see, like, there's that history there of this is what the country has done. And this is like legitimate history too. Like, you look at American history, like this is, you know, more of fictionalized, like science fiction, but there's some historical, you know, precedent for some of this stuff. and just like to a different degree. And so like you see that, and then you see what you know, Falcon is dealing with in a government that's like would rather, you know, choose someone else who they can control and who they can make do what they want and make sure that they're the face, you know, the image that they want to portray of what Captain America should be, right? And then, you know, alongside that, you have that character with this new captain trying to basically make sure that Bucky and Falcon like come and join him. And so that, and he even says, kind of the government, you know, like he makes this comment and you're like, oh, that seems like it's a little more to that, where it, to me, like it's seeming like there's some really nefarious stuff going on. And that's partly why I just want to punch him in the face. Like he's really punchable. And then it seems like there's some control, something trying to happen there.
Yeah. And I mean, he's kind of like the guy who gets the job that you work with that is like completely unqualified and like is like, oh man, can you like help me out with this? I need you to do this. I need you to do that. And it's like, no, like go away.
Yeah, but that was the weird thing on it though, is they were like, oh, he's a multiple hero, blah blah, you know, even them making the joke about would you ever lay on a grenade, and he's like, yeah, I mean that's what I do with my helmet, you know, he's like explaining it. You know, so
but
I don't know.
He's not a superhero.
Right. Exactly. Right.
That's the difference, right? Is like, sure, to the standards of non-superheroes, he's probably maybe the most qualified. But he is not anywhere near worthy compared to Sam Wilson.
But that, I guess if you take it back, though, like Tony Stark, Sam Wilson, you know, even Black Widow, they're not super soldiers. They're not superheroes. They have gadgets, right? That's what makes them special, is what they've created and what they're using. So you could say almost the same thing for him. Now, I'm not, trust me, I don't like this character.
I'm going to be comic book guy. So actually, in the comics, Sam Wilson could actually talk to birds and make them do things.
Oh, no. So we got Aquaman here.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the comics, at least in a couple of the series I've been reading, because I've trying to engross myself more in the, you know, Marvel comics in general. And yeah. You know how he has Red Wing? It's like the little robot, like jet thing on his back. Well, he actually has a bird named Red Wing in the comics, and that's like his little partner.
Okay. Well, I'm glad they didn't Snow White him in this, and they made it a little bit better.
Yeah. Well,
Snow White.
So there's one comic where the birds really, you know, they help out, because there is a giant cloud of fleas that have drank blood that can sterilize all of humanity. And luckily, the only thing that can eat an airborne plague of fleas is a whole lot of birds. Saves the day. Just saying.
Saves the day.
Spoiled it a little bit. I'm sorry. But, yeah.
Hey, that sounds like a terrible thing, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds just awful. It's like up there with locusts.
But I think that's what I think I was getting turned off by the second episode, because it almost seemed like they were wanting you to like this character. Like they're almost trying to say like, hey, he is kind of qualified in a sense because he is a war hero, all these other things. But then they kept putting these other little jabs in there outside of him being annoying, because like the one friend of his is like, you can't punch your way out of this situation. And then at the very end, he drops that line of, okay, well, stay the hell out of my way. And then, okay.
Yeah.
So we do or we don't like you.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I think what we're seeing is like a redemption story arc. Like we're supposed to not like him, and then something's going to happen at the end, and you know, then he's going to come back around, because like his big, schism with them happened in episode two, where he's like, "Well, I don't just stay out of my way." Like he's the big guy now, right? Because he saved them, quote unquote, saved them. When they were fighting the like posse of super soldier kids on the truck, like he came in and like was helping, you know, kind of clean that up a little bit where, you know, they were struggling in the beginning. So I don't know. We'll see. I don't like him.
Yeah.
He's derpy.
I think that's going to end up just being he's a super soldier that got lucky one day and they picked him. I think that's
he's not a super soldier, though.
No.
He's not? Are you sure? Because he seemed a little.
That's all the vibranium, man. That's all the. Yeah. That's just him slinging the shield, but no. Just
slinging it? Yeah.
He's just a strong dude, like a normal strong dude, though, but he's not a super soldier. They explicitly, I think, said that in one of the
episodes. Did they? Okay, I must have missed it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the first part that I really liked out of that episode, though, was after that scene and Bucky and Sam are walking on the street and they try pulling up, opening the door, like, here, hop in. And they're like, nah. And they just straight walk past.
Yeah, yeah, that was super good. Funny.
Like, nah, bro. Nah.
So, yeah, unless you all have anything else, I've got one more question for everybody.
Yep.
And I'm going to go first. So the question is, are you a Falcon person or are you a Bucky person? Winter Soldier, whatever. I personally, I love them both. Sam Wilson's awesome. The comics are great when he's Captain America, because I've been reading them this last week. But I'm a Bucky person because he's a chip on his shoulder and he's a smart aleck. And, you know, that's kind of my personality sometimes. Definitely a smart aleck. Not always a chip on my shoulder, but sometimes, you know, it helps to have a chip on your shoulder. Makes you fight a little harder. So, yeah, I'm a Bucky person. What about you? Adam, go.
That's actually really hard between the two of them because I do admire the friendship and stuff that Sam had with Steve Rogers and how he defended him through the Civil War and all that. There was a lot there. I do like his character and his humor. And I also really like Bucky. There again, his friendship, he went from being the big guy to, you know, he got a little bit of his jealousy whenever Steve got his powers and where he was abandoned and what happened to him mentally. And there's just a lot of weight there. I probably relate more to him just because of maybe that side of it. You know, you just, that's real life. Those are things that you got to deal with sometimes. However, I will say I enjoyed Bucky more whenever he had long hair. Thought he looked way cooler with the mask and the long hair than the short hair Bucky. But I don't know.
Yeah, I hate to break it to you. In the comics, when I've seen him, he is short hair too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think I might like Sam more than Bucky, but that's really hard. It's really, that's a difficult one to say one over the other. Cause I really like the buddy cop. It's like saying Danny Glover versus, Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. You know, you just,
Danny Glover, hands down. What?
I don't know.
Yeah. Mel Gibson's a turd, man. He's a turd in the movie too. He's a loser.
I mean,
Danny Glover saves the day all the time.
Forget.
He's getting too old for this shit.
Nah, man. Like, I love the craziness, though.
They basically are Danny Glover and Mel Gibson.
It's the yin and yang. The crazy one and the calm one. The funny one and the not so funny. You know what I mean? It's just...
Yep. Suicidal guy who's got a lot of crap in his past. Dude just wants to take care of his family.
Yeah.
In this case, I like Bucky. But in the Lethal Weapon case, I'm a Danny Glover guy all the way.
I agree, Danny Glover for sure.
All right, Adam. So, what's your pick here?
I think I'm going to go with Sam.
I figured you as more of a Sam kind of guy. So it's good to hear that. All right, Ron, what you got?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go Bucky just because of the story of. Just that story that's starting to build of how complicated he is. I really like complicated heroes, especially ones that have like a dark past, because I think that's more true to
like, almost like an anti-hero type of.
Yeah, almost an anti-hero where it's like they could have gone the other direction, but something, you know, tripped in them and they changed. I thought it was funny, like when Sam was like, a minute in Wakanda and you're the White Panther, and it's like, it's a white wolf. It's like, what? It's like, that's exactly it. Like, that's the kind of thing, that I really like is, those kinds of characters that, you know, really are really deep, dark at times, you know. It's they got some stuff in their past.
That's usually my go-to are the anti-heroes, like Venom and Punisher and those kinds of guys. But I don't know. And like I said, there again, it's pretty much a tie for me between the two of them. But if I have to pick one, that's probably where I'm going to go.
Yeah, it's very hard. Like, this is, I really am enjoying this. And I'm glad they are not just doing this as a movie. I really like that we're getting more story and more time to build out a story around this.
It is hard to watch this show, though, and, you know, not have Steve Rogers. Sometimes I just wish he was there just to kind of to bury it, but at the same time, it makes sense.
I wonder if they'll have him do any cameos as old Steve.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, what'd you say, Adam? There's, like, supposed to be 6 episodes in this?
Yeah.
It's a possibility, but I guess it depends on how much they want to put into effects.
Like, yeah, I know, right?
You know, because at least in one of the series, the all new Captain America, where Sam is Captain America, but he still has his wings and everything. Old Steve is around, like he's kind of like his, like control tower, like
a mentor, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, he's his mentor, like kind of sending him on missions and doing things. He's not actually doing them, but he's, you know, managing it. He's his manager, basically.
He's like the Nick Fury for him, in a sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even though Nick Fury's in there too, but But it's Sammy J. Nick Fury, so it's good Nick Fury.
I'm curious to see what's happening with Loki, because. Just like I said before with the WandaVision stuff, I really didn't have an interest to watch it, and I thought I was done with the MCU after Endgame, and then I watched it, and then I really liked it, and then I'm watching this one, and I'm really liking it, and I had no interest in Loki because I don't want to see his character arc return back to the bad guy, but now I'm sitting here thinking, like, if they're doing this good, both of them, you know this one's going to be good too, but... There's some interesting things when you watch the trailer for that, because there's even like a point where like Natasha is sitting on a bench or something like that. And it just, the reason why I bring it up is because we talk about seeing a cameo of old Steve Rogers, like, okay, where this may go. If you're seeing Natasha, I mean, this may be all over the place.
Yeah. And I think, Black Widow is finally supposed to come out soon.
Yeah. I believe it's going to be streamable too now. I think they may have finally made that decision.
Yep. But yeah, so that's the first 2 episodes of The Winter Soldier. Next week, we're going to do episode 3, which comes out tomorrow. But that'll give us a week to chew on it before we discuss it next week. Probably won't be as, the discussion probably won't be as long as it was this week, unless there's something stellar that happens, just because we'll be only doing 1 episode. But I did want to remind everybody that next episode, right, Ryan? That's what we talked about. This is 3rd episode in. Yeah. So next episode, we are going to talk about Neil Gaiman's The Eternals. So if you haven't read it yet, you can check out the Media Club link to buy it on Amazon and give us a little bit of change in the purchase. Help the podcast, you know, get the pay for the website and, you know, whatever. So that's much appreciated. And yeah, we're going to talk about that next week. It's pretty short, so I'm kind of excited about that. But I guess that wraps us up for this week. So say goodbye, everybody.
See you next week.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Go to diversion.fm to subscribe and listen weekly in your podcast player of choice. If you like the show, share it with a friend. Thanks again, and see you next week.